SBS live streams and podcasts are supported by advertising.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.
SBS, a world of difference. You're with NITV Radio, on mobile, online and on radio.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land NITV Radio broadcasts from, the Cammeraygal people and their elders past and present. We also acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander tribes and clans we broadcast to, from the mountains to the plains, from the desert to the sea, from fresh water to salt water.
Yira Damarang, hello, I'm your host Luana Grant and welcome to NITV Radio for this Friday, the 12th of July. Coming up on today's show, NITV Radio shares a special podcast episode from the series Grand Gestures. This episode features an interview with singer-songwriter Emily Warramurra, who takes us back to her childhood on Groote Island and introduces us to two of the women who made her who she is today, her Lola and Gargu, her grandmothers. And we share a few stories from our NITV news team. All these stories coming up after NITV Radio's news wrap of the week.
Australia Day 1972 saw the first Aboriginal embassy erected outside Parliament.
The native title legislation must be amended.
And they've walked this land so many times before anybody came.
I am sorry.
The Northern Territory Police Commissioner has announced the end of a snap curfew imposed on Alice Springs. Commissioner Michael Murphy said in a statement yesterday the 72-hour stay-at-home order, which barred access to the CBD from 10pm to 6am, would end at 12:55pm local time, saying there were no reasonable grounds for an extension. Renewed clashes in Alice Springs threatened to extend the emergency measure imposed on Monday after a series of violent incidents. Mr. Murphy said that during the past 3 days, police engaged with 159 people, directing 93 to leave the curfew area, and there was one minor event which saw several people arrested. This comes after the Mayor of Alice Springs, Matt Patterson, said the controversial curfew imposed at the start of NAIDOC week had been working in reducing incidents. NT Police Minister Brent Potter said Wednesday's incident was not a reason for extending the order.
We know more about the incident that occurred yesterday and the circumstances behind it. It is the police commissioner's discretion. He doesn't believe he needs to extend the curfew. We also need to look at what the curfew was intended for, a short, sharp circuit breaker related to alcohol-fueled violence and assaults after dark.
The Federal Minister for Indigenous Australians, Linda Burney, says the government is committed to a truth-telling commission. The failure of the Voice to Parliament referendum last year was seen as a major blow to the cause. But Ms. Burney has told the ABC truth-telling is not just a government issue, and communities right across the country are taking up the issue in a variety of ways. In NAIDOC week, Ms. Burney says she doesn't feel Indigenous affairs is a bipartisan issue, saying the coalition are spoilers for refusing to support the Voice to Parliament. However, she says the fact millions of Australians did vote for the Voice to Parliament, the emergence of young Indigenous leaders and the attention on Indigenous advantage were all silver linings to the referendum's failure. Federal Social Services Minister Amanda Rishworth says the government stands by the decision to abolish the so-called cashless debit cards even after mixed findings in a newly released review by the University of Adelaide. The policy was introduced by the coalition government in 2016 to reduce social harm at a number of sites around the country, affecting a number of Indigenous communities. The card quarantines 80% of a person's welfare payments on a debit card that cannot be used to withdraw cash or buy alcohol or gambling products. A 2022 Australian National Audit Office report found the program was not meeting its objectives, and it was scrapped by the Albanese government that same year, with ministers saying that would allow participants to access cheaper food and goods. A review by the University of Adelaide noted mixed reactions to the scheme's end, with most participants believing the program's end was a positive step. A small number of past participants say the scheme's end had led to poor decision-making and financial coercion. Minister Rishworth says the report needs to be read carefully.
What I would point you to in the report is that it was clear that no causal link could be drawn as a result of the changes that we made from removing the compulsory cashless debit card that didn't help people actually manage their money. So what we moved to was a voluntary income management program. We will continue to work with communities around what actually makes a difference.
Almost $10 million will be provided to First Nations organisations to support Indigenous students. The GO Foundation, which supports Indigenous students during their education through the preparation for the workforce, will receive $4 million, whilst the Aurora Foundation will receive $4.5 million, with hopes of doubling its capacity across Australia. Education Minister Jason Clarke says this will help make Australians' education system equitable.
We've got a good education system in Australia, but the truth is it can be a lot better and it can be a lot fairer. I often talk about the point that young people from poor families, young people from regional Australia are less likely to finish school and less likely to go on to university than many other children in Australia. And that's also very true of Indigenous Australians. And if we want to fix that, if we want to close the gap, if we want to turn that around, it's the sort of things that the Aurora Foundation and the GO Foundation are doing that can help us to do that.
An area of land and sea bigger than Tasmania is being set aside to form 12 new Indigenous protected areas around Australia. The federal government has announced the areas, which will be managed by local First Nations corporations. In the New South Wales Bulinga Valley, the coast will be protected along with the koala habitat and Gondwana forests. Local jobs for First Nations people will be created, adding more than 700 positions which already exist around Australia, managing Indigenous protected areas. Dean Kelly from the Yurunga Aboriginal Corporation says that's one of the most significant benefits from this announcement.
The meaningful employment options that are going to come out of this for my people from this land, where they actually get to do what they believe in, look after the land that they were raised to look after. I think that's the real beautiful part that I want to see come to fruition.
The federal government has announced Australia is to provide an additional $250 million in military assistance to Ukraine. It's the largest single Australian aid package since Russia's invasion, bringing the country's total military assistance to more than $1.1 billion. It comes as world leaders discuss the conflict at the NATO summit in Washington, where Deputy Prime Minister Richard Marles is in attendance. Australia's largest international air combat training activity begins today. More than 4,000 personnel and 140 aircraft from 20 nations will take part in Exercise Pitch Black in the Northern Territory across the next 4 weeks. The Philippines, Spain, Italy, Fiji, Brunei and Papua New Guinea will take part in the exercise for the first time, which will be the largest iteration of the event in its 43-year history. Peter Robinson, officer conducting Exercise Pitch Black, says he's excited to have the Philippines involved.
One of the ones that we're most excited is to invite the Philippines for their first time to Exercise Pitch Black. And it's a reflection of the professionalism of the Philippines Air Force, and it's a reflection of what the Philippines Air Force might learn from the other nations here, but it's also a reflection of what we'll learn from the Philippines Air Force as well.
The head of Australia's Olympic team says she's not worried about security at this year's Games as she announced the finalised Australian squad before departing for Paris 2024. Australia's 460-strong contingent, one of the largest in the nation's history, features a high proportion of women than any previous Games and is likely to be the third largest delegation this year. There have been safety concerns after violent clashes that broke out in Paris when people took to the streets to celebrate a shock win in the general election for the country's left-wing coalition. The head of Australia's mission, former cyclist and two-time gold medalist Anna Meares, says she is confident athletes will remain safe at the Games set to begin on July 26.
Security obviously is still a priority for us, and it has been right along the way in terms of our preparations for the Games. We know that there's been unrest and riots and protests in Paris. This is normal. This is how they express themselves. And we know that Paris has been able to put on big events in the past, as they have with the Rugby World Cup, with minimal disruption.
Indigenous rangers in Queensland are using drones to locate koalas as they work to protect koala populations ahead of cultural burning. The practice has been used by First Nations people to improve the health of the land and reduce the risk of uncontrolled fires, with the use of small-scale burns that consider the types of plants and animals living in the area. The training has been done through the Quandamooka Yulabarabi Aboriginal Corporation. Kia Morgan is one of the first to complete the cultural fire and drone training on North Stradbroke Island. She told charity WWF Australia that it has been exciting finding different tools to maintain an Indigenous approach to land care.
I was just flying drones as a hobby, and then when I got approached to do this project, it was really exciting for me. We did some night training with thermal imaging, which was really interesting. I think the collaboration between technology and traditional owners and looking after the environment is really important, because traditionally we know the ways, we know how animals are, but just having this technology to help is really important, and it's going to get us a lot further in our research.
The achievements of 10 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people have been recognised at the 2024 NAIDOC Awards this week. The awards, held on Saturday evening in Adelaide, recognise the contributions of First Nations people in their communities and celebrated Indigenous excellence. The NAIDOC Person of the Year is Aunty Muriel Bamblett, a Yorta Yorta elder. As the chief executive of the Victorian Aboriginal Childcare Agency since 1999, Ms. Bamblett has advocated for Indigenous children to be raised with connection to their own culture. During her speech, she made special mention of those working in public service.
To all the people that work in the public service, to all the people that serve every day, our people in policy and education and justice and family violence, child protection, I honour you, because this award would not be possible without all of those areas working together for better outcomes.
First Nations filmmakers in South Australia are getting the opportunity to showcase their work to a wider audience, with Adelaide the focus city for this year's NAIDOC Week. Around 100 people attended the Black Reels event at the Art Gallery of South Australia, watching three short films by First Nations creatives. Among the films was the multi-award-winning documentary Dripped in Black. It follows the journey of a queer theatre artist as he returns to his hometown in Central Australia for spiritual healing. The film's writer and director, Derek Lynch, told NITV he wants those in the First Nations queer community to know it's okay to seek help.
I think it's very important to tell my story and to share it in terms of mental health. Mental health is what, you know, we suffer as queer First Nations people, because we get overlooked at, and it's so very important to put this message out there. It is okay to be, you know, queer, and it is okay to stand up and be strong and be loud.
And that is NITV Radio's News Wrap of the Week.
Your community, your conversation. NITV Radio. Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Luana Grant, and you're listening to NITV Radio. Still to come on the show, NITV Radio shares a special episode from the series Grand Gestures. This episode features an interview with singer-songwriter Emily Warramara, who takes us back to her childhood on Groote Island and introduces us to two of the women who made her who she is today, her Lola and Gargu. But first, here are a few of the top stories from NITV News Team. This week, we have celebrated NAIDOC Week with this year's theme, Calling on Our Mob to Keep the Fire Burning, Black, Loud and Proud. And on Saturday, the annual National NAIDOC Awards recognise those who have spent a lifetime doing exactly that. Among this year's big winners, two women who've devoted themselves to improving the health and well-being of our children.
The 2024 National NAIDOC Awards on Kaurna Country. A night to celebrate Indigenous culture, achievement and contribution. Highlighted by this year's Lifetime Achievement Award winner, Auntie Dulcie Flowers. The Torres Strait Islander not only spent her life advocating for First Nations health, but also played a pivotal role in the 1967 referendum. Auntie Dulcie thanking colleagues throughout her career for their support and reflecting on the fire of this year's theme.
You have to think of the force of it. You have to think of the good that it does, the danger that it presents, and the strength that it has within it.
Lighting the way to a bright future, Tiwi Island mental health advocate and boxer Dante Rodriguez claiming Youth of the Year.
Stay black, stay loud, stay proud, and I see you mob on the dance floor.
Boxing again in the spotlight as Olympic and Commonwealth Games athlete Alex Winwood took out Sportsperson of the Year, and Gaija woman Nayara was honoured for her achievements in international musical theatre.
I'm a proud underdog and strive to tell people that your persistence and the community you keep can help you break down big walls and smash even bigger dreams.
Before the moment of the night saw an emotional Auntie Muriel Bamblett named 2024 Person of the Year.
I think this is the most amazing occasion for me. To all the people that work in the public service, to all the people that serve every day, I honour you because this award would not be possible without all of those areas working together for better outcomes.
Dingo lovers have held new research showing the animal's genetic makeup stretches back thousands of years. They say the findings of the DNA study highlight the need for a greater protection of an iconic native Australian species.
Lynn Watson has been caring for dingoes for 40 years.
Good boy.
Inspired by a childhood obsession with the Australian animal.
They're very cat-like in many, many ways. They're independent, yeah, don't need me, but tell me, have a bond with me, and that bond is so special.
But it's a bond quite different to that formed with a dog. She says they're two quite distinct beasts, despite the many misconceptions that have grown.
Behaviourally different, physically different.
New genetic research has reinforced her view that dingo is very much in a category of its own.
Dingoes and current domesticated breeds of dogs don't share anything in common.
DNA fossils more than 2,700 years old found in Australia show they're more closely matched to their ancient forebears, rather than any modern dog types that arrived with European colonisation.
Definitely no interbreeding with domestic dogs over the years.
With the dingo population spread between two groups, those to the west of the Great Dividing Range and those to the east. And the study also provides more evidence of how dingoes have evolved over the centuries, adopting characteristics to suit the environment in which they live. Alpine dingo Pumba, for instance, has a bushier coat for the colder climate, while Kimmy, who hails from Western Australia's arid and rocky north, has a leaner frame and exceptional climbing skills. Despite recent attacks and one particularly high-profile tragedy,
I ran out of the tent. I said to Michael, a dingo's got the baby.
Lynn Watson says dingoes are more shy than predatory, with a uniqueness to the country.
Our dingo is so far supreme, but it is the Southern Hemisphere wolf, and we need to accept that, and we need to embrace that, and we need to protect that.
Gareth Borum for NITV News.
An art exhibition by Mob in the South Australian town of Ceduna is promoting the protection of sea country. Artists from the nations across the state's far west coast are showing their work, using their creations to teach the public about caring for marine life.
Turning someone else's trash into treasure. The jellyfish sculpture, crafted from marine debris, just one of the sea creatures created here from discarded fishing nets.
Our big goal is to keep our beaches clean and pristine, and also protecting our marine life that's in the water as well.
The sculptures are showcasing Indigenous culture and raising awareness about harmful fishing practices.
We love the ocean. We go out fishing. If we catch too much, we share it out to family.
Two sculptures from this area, a crab called Galdamurra and Jidara the whale, have been sold to a Swiss gallery.
He got to go to Monaco overseas, so last year he done a tour in Europe. And he's been having some fun times and he's sailed a long way from us, but it's good to have that feedback and comments come back to us.
The ocean is a strong theme for these artists. The Mirning people are the cultural custodians of the Great Australian Bight, a nationally significant whale nursery. The Aboriginal nations of South Australia's far west coast stood together to protest against oil drilling here.
Sea snake, stingray.
In 2020, Norwegian company Equinor pulled out of the controversial project.
And if they didn't drill, that's what would have happened. Everything would have been skeletal on the sea.
And a lot of rope as well.
Women and children from the Yalata community, west of Ceduna, collected discarded rope from fishing vessels and other recycled material to make this South Australian Harlequin reef fish.
It means that we're doing something good for our community, and also our environment and keeping Mother Earth safe.
The orca, also a result of the collaboration, carries an important message.
It was also made with black and white, also to make a big statement for reconciliation.
To bring Indigenous and non-Indigenous communities together.
One of my favourites.
In Ceduna, Peter Doherty, NITV News.
Conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio. Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to NITV Radio. Grand Gestures is an SBS podcast series hosted by Lizzie Hu. This episode features an interview with singer-songwriter Emily Waramara, who takes us back to her childhood on Groote Island off the coast of the Northern Territory and introduces us to two of the women who made her who she is today. Emily joins Lizzie to share stories of her island childhood with her Gagu and Lola and reflect on the lessons both women passed down to her about life, art and motherhood.
Most people wouldn't have been to Groote Island or even know where it is. Can you explain to us what Groote Island is like?
So Groote Island is in the Gulf of Carpentaria in Northern Territory. It's like a little tropical paradise. You know, it's island life. Island life all the way. Like, you got people riding around in troopies, riding on top of troopies. You got people still going out and swimming with the crocs. It's real laid back and it's way too chill sometimes. Lots of friends and parties. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and the wet season there is so magical. Like, you have this, like, really beautiful, cool breeze that comes through when it's raining. And it's really, it's like another portal to another world. Like, there are all these beautiful elements, like the trees, the plants. It's just a whole different world. When people do go there for the first time, they come out and they just don't want to leave, you know, and I think that that's like trying to put myself in my lawless shoes. It's like coming from a really busy city over to this beautiful island. It's like a little fairy tale.
Mm-hmm. The seas surrounding Groot Island are important to your mob, the Wananjiliakwa people, and especially your Gagu, your mum's mum. Why is that?
The ocean is so sacred to my people. We're surrounded by it, but it's also what our song line runs through. And that's something that my Gagu always drilled into me, that all the beings on the land are just as important as the beings that dwell in the sea. When we used to like have camps, big camping grounds and big campfires and things like that, she would always make sure the kids used to pick up their rubbish. Like, we weren't allowed, if we were to leave something there, you wouldn't want to leave something there, let's just say that.
Gagu is coming for you. And there's a nearby island called Bickerton.
Yeah.
Why is Bickerton important for your family?
So Bickerton is what we call like Miliakbara in Anantiliakwa. It's the ancestral lands for the Wudamard people, so my tribe. My great-great, oh goodness, so many greats back, established a community there. You know, our dreaming stories around Bickerton as well are so special. We've got like stories about mermaids, about sea serpents, about fairies, about these magical rocks that get thrown onto caves and make different weather happen. It's just such a special, special, special place.
Would your Gagu tell you all these stories? Was this an important part of your relationship?
There's a lot of stories that I feel like when she told me, it really instilled this sense of fantasy, this magic into my life where, you know, like we have these things called little blum-blum men, which are like moving trees. She used to always tell us, like, when you're passing a tree, just say hello and acknowledge it. And I thought that was really cool.
That is really cool. I really like that. Your Gagu has some stories about mermaids. Can you tell me them?
Mermaids are a big part of, I guess, our matriarchal storyline. They say that, like, my ancestors were mermaids. My grandmother used to always tell me this story about this, her great-great-great-grandfather, who they believe got taken by mermaids. And then she used to pull out, like, these little shells and these little rocks, colourful rocks. And then when you like spoke to it or like whistle to it, like just weird things would happen. Like the wind would go crazy or like all of a sudden these clouds would show up or like all of a sudden it'd start raining and it's like a sunny day. But I think like my grandmother was a very magical woman.
So do you think that magic she created comes out in your music as well? Because when I listen to your music, it feels very ethereal.
I think most definitely her stories used to get me through things. There's a story about this woman who embraces herself and the change, and she changes into this Brolga. And I used to love reflecting on that in high school because it was always like something that reminded me like, hey, I'm ever changing and I'm growing and I'm or not going to be the same person as yesterday. So her stories taught me a lot of morals in my own life too. Yeah, and I think that that really comes through in my music in the way that I connect or will try to connect with the people who are listening. I try to do it on more of a really deep lyrical level.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio. Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to NITV Radio. Today we are excited to be sharing an episode of Grand Gestures, an SBS podcast series hosted by Lizzie Hu. In this episode, Lizzie is joined by singer-songwriter Emily Waramara.
Your Gagu grew up in the mission on Groot. Do you know what she was like when she was growing up?
From what I know, she's very cheeky. She's very cheeky. She was very sporty. She played basketball. She played footy. She had a razz at cricket. when she was growing up, she was the one who took care of, like, was the babysitter, you know, was the one who changed the nappies and, you know, got the bottles. Like, she was very much a young matriarch. Like, she had my mum when she was 17. So she was a very young mama.
And is this where she met your pop, Donnie?
So my pop, Donnie, wasn't my biological pop. My real grandfather is Greek. And I haven't met my real grandfather yet, but Pop Don pretty much looked after us, and he was my pop. And they met at the mission. His family are originally from Boolula, and they went over to Elko Island, and then they ended up at the mission on Groot Island. And then after my grandmother had my mum, they kind of were like, I like you, I like you too, and that was it.
So you're living on Groot Island. Gargo and Pop Donnie are on Bickerton. How do you get to their place?
I can, like, think of so many times when I've, like, gone on the boat with my grandparents and I felt like the boat was going to tip because the waves are, like, taller than the boat. But my grandfather, like, he knew how to read the stars and he knew how to navigate the waters really well. So my grandparents grew up with canoes. Like, they would use canoes to travel back and forth between the island. And so they had really, really good knowledge about the sea and the dark bits. Like, they just knew it like the back of their hands. But, yeah, it's a good trip, but it's a bit scary.
So you'd catch the boat over to Gargu and Pop's home on Bickerton. What would you get up to with them?
I was very spoiled with seafood, I'll tell you that. I just remember every day we would, like, go on the boat, go fishing. We would go, like, spearing for crabs or, like, stingray. We would go, like, shooting for buffalo, bullocky, or, like, kangaroo.
The seafood sounds amazing. So how would you cook that seafood? You'd bring in your fresh haul, and would Gargu cook it for you, or...?
Yeah, like sometimes we'd just set up fire on the beach where we catch it and then just chuck it in the pot there. And my Gargu, like, she used to have, like, this little box with all her spices. So, like, king's curry, like, salt, heaps and heaps of salt. She loved her salt. She used to bring her little spice thing with her and just onions and get some, like, vegetables. And then she'd put that in, like, a little bag, and then off we go. And that was it.
So your Gargu was a painter. And I heard she had some pretty unique brushes.
So my Gargu used to cut my hair because it was so fine and use it for her brushes. So she would, like, make her own brushes out of all the grandkids' hairs.
Oh, my gosh.
It was pretty cool. Like, we'd have haircuts and then she'd, like, growl my mom and be like, make sure you keep that hair. Like, I need that hair. Mom would be like, well, that's weird, but okay. So she would come over with her little bag and then fill it up with, like, my hair. Because one time I shaved my hair and my Barbie's hair, and I would have been about 6 years old. And my mom was so mad, but my Gargu, like, she was so happy. She was like, yes. Like, instead of getting angry, like, mom told her what happened and she was like, oh, yes. Thank you. I need more hair.
So good. And did she ever sell her paintings?
My Gargu was an incredible painter. And, like, she used to sell her paintings to the art gallery. And I think that that was really tough for her because a lot of those stories were so personal but also so sacred. And back then, I just remember when people would buy her paintings to, like, resell, they would buy it for her for, like, $200 and then resell it for, like, thousands of dollars. And I used to, like, get so angry. So whenever I did try to tell her how I would feel, she would just be like, oh, that's okay. Like, money wasn't the big thing. It was more so that she loved creating art and creating these stories and archiving them too. I think that's one of the things that I found challenging while watching my grandmother sell her art, was seeing how undervalued she was taken advantage of.
Mm. Do you have any of her paintings?
You know what? Really, really sad. But I had a house fire a couple of years ago, and all of her paintings, all of her weavings that I had all burnt in the fire. And then I moved here to Luchuita and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to like Google and see if anyone has her paintings. And I found this art shop in Nipaluna in Hobart who had one of my grandmother's paintings and was selling it for like $10,000. And then I like messaged them, told them like my situation and what happened. And they were like, oh, do you just want to come pick it up? I was like, are you serious? Like you're giving me back my grandmother's paintings? And so far that was the only art gallery that did so. Like there are so many in this country who have my grandmother's things, but you know, won't return them. which is fine because when I make that money, I'm buying it all back.
Yeah.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Hi, you're listening to the radio of NITV.
And that was singer-songwriter Emily Warramara chatting to Lizzie Hu for the podcast series Grand Gestures. To hear this episode in full, head to the SBS audio website. Grand Gestures is hosted by Lizzie Hu and the executive producer is Kelly Riordan.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
And that's all we have time for on today's program. You can listen back to the show anytime online or catch any of our stories on our website at sbs.com.au. NITV Radio will be back next week with more stories from right across the country. Happy NAIDOC Week. I'm your host, Luana Grant Mundungor, and thanks so much for listening.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.